Welcome to another episode of Dinner at Our Place. I'm Steve Pierce. I'm here with my lovely and talented and beautiful wife, Jessie. Jessie, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I am very well. And the reason why I am very well is because we're about to make history. Dinner at Our Place history. We have our first dinner guest.
I'm so excited.
Our first dinner guest this week is Jessie and I's very good friend, Mr. Ben Wagner. Ben, say hello to the fine, all eight of the people that listen to this show.
Hi, guys. Long time, first time.
Now that we've got the sports radio quotient filled, I feel really good about where we are. I guess a little bit of background would be in order. Ben is actually my friend first.
He's my friend too.
Ben's been there since the very beginning.
I
was there the night you guys met. So
that's true. Ben and I we lived on the same floor in the dorms our freshman year in college at BYU. Ben lived two doors down from us. Thankfully, not three doors down because then we would be playing the Trump inauguration. Ben lived a couple doors down. He was just a guy, random guy from South Carolina who we didn't really know. There was a lot of guys on the floor who I kind of grew up with and went to high school with. And Ben was very quickly grafted into our group of friends because we had pretty much all of the same interests. And so that we kind of hit it off pretty quick. Isn't that right, Ben?
I think it was about the time I agreed to watch The OC that I was ingrained into the group.
That's a big moment in anyone's life. I think you were one of the, maybe not, I don't know if you were the first, but one of the first that I did my patented OC indoctrination test on. I have a theory that if you watch the first two episodes back to back in one sitting, there is no way that you will not at least finish the first season. It has never been proven wrong, and I've done it many times.
And then you will follow by naming your child after the main character, right?
That's true. Also true.
Ben was on your floor freshman year, but yeah. I want to know, who played more FIFA freshman year between the two of you?
Gosh, there was a lot of irresponsible behavior freshman year.
I think I'm gonna have to take the credit as having played the most FIFA. I did not have a Jessie to keep me in line at all.
That's so true. Well, all the times I was hanging out with you, Jessie, and cavorting and doing whatever we were doing back in the day, Ben was at home playing FIFA
or watching 24.
There was a lot of 24 back in the day. That was a different time in our lives. My favorite Ben Wagner story from freshman year, actually, and I think this is a good segue into our first segment tonight. One of my favorite things from freshman year was, if you don't know about BYU, on Tuesdays, BYU at 11 o'clock, BYU has a devotional where all students have to go and listen to some speaker, or they're supposed to go. Well, the rebellious souls that we were, Ben and myself and our friends, we didn't go to any devotionals. I don't think I ever went to one, actually. Maybe one at some point. But we would go at 11 o'clock on Tuesdays, and we would go to Wendy's, which we would call Burger Tuesdays. And we would eat Wendy's from 11 to 12 on Tuesdays until we realized that we were too poor to afford Wendy's. And then we just started going to the cafeteria where we got the food for free. But very early on in the Burger Tuesday experience, we were leaving the restaurant and throwing away our food. And Ben... Ben, you've always been like a bigger guy, and you're a big guy. I mean, you're tall, you're like 6'4", and you're always a husky guy. We were throwing away the trays, and everyone, you know, takes the stuff off the tray and puts it in the trash, and then stacks the tray in the tray stack above the trash can. And Ben just blows through all sense of etiquette and throws the entire tray into the trash can. And I remember somebody said, Ben, Why did you throw out the entire tray? And your response, which I still laugh about every time I hear it, is, that's what they get for killing me slowly.
So I was fighting back against the man.
You're fighting against the man and the cholesterol and the calories and all of that.
Well, I think that is a really good segue into the first thing we're going to talk about, because Ben, we saw him last, we hadn't seen him in a few years,
That was the old Ben Wagner.
That was the old Ben Wagner. New Ben Wagner we met up with last fall when we were in Utah. We called him out of the blue and he met us one night at Iceberg. If you're familiar with Iceberg, it's a fabulous malt shake place in Utah. He came.
Ridiculously huge shakes.
Like this shake's the size of my child.
About the same yeah. size, yeah.
Like about the size of my child. Anyway, yeah. we Steve and I were going there because it's always a Utah must have when we're in town. We called Ben and Ben came and met us. And I kind of had known that you were on doing this weight loss thing. I don't know what you call it, on your weight loss journey.
You've seen some Facebook posts.
Yeah, I had seen some Facebook
journey.
Posts. But it wasn't,
lifestyle
he didn't
change.
Post about it much. He didn't post, I feel like other people posted about it. Ben didn't post about it as much. He was more humble about it. Anyway, I had seen a few things, but when you showed up there, it was A, great to see you. B, you looked fabulous. And then we spent the rest of the night talking and he gave us a play-by-play of how he had done all of this, not because he was offering the information, but because I was grilling him. We were playing like 10,000 questions and I was nitpicking into everything you had done during the year to reach where you were at. And meanwhile, Steve and I were sitting there eating massive shakes while Ben is sitting there eating nothing and telling us like the very strict plan he had experienced. So anyway, it was very
How much weight had you lost? Yeah, I think you lost something like 140 something pounds by that point, Ben, in like a year's time.
Yeah. Yeah, at that point I was probably down about 130. And that was what, maybe September, October? It was in the fall at some point, right?
It was in September, yeah.
But anyway, it was very ironic how we were hearing about this while we were just gorging ourselves with ice cream and Ben's like sitting there being very disciplined and very inspiring and very motivating. Like I how many times after we saw Ben, Steve, how many times over the next few weeks was I like so inspired by what he had done?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I think that's why there's two reasons we wanted to have you on. But the first reason was because, you know, Jesse was really inspired by kind of your journey and this whole experience and thought that it would be a worthwhile thing for others to hear. So I guess we could start by just talking about, tell us how kind of all this got started. What kind of motivated you to make like such a big change in your life where I think you've lost like 155 pounds now in just a little bit more than a year?
Yeah. I kind of started around the Super Bowl, not this past Super Bowl, but the one before that. But it's one of those things. Hemingway has this quote that I love, that you go broke really slowly then all at once. And that's kind of how it was. It's just years and years of not taking care of myself, graduate school where I gained a lot of weight. Turns out grad school, not a great place to take care of your body.
Grad school is just bad for everyone, no matter what, right?
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Yeah. Kidding.
It has its ups and downs.
Side effects.
Side effect for sure. Like in grad school, I would not eat until like 2 or 3 in the afternoon because I was teaching at 8 a.m. and then going all day and then leave campus and be like, I'm so hungry. I'm going to go to Sonic and spend like $20 on fast food and eat like 4,000 calories.
Did you really spend $20 at Sonic?
No.
That's a lot of
Sonic. That maybe is an exaggeration, but it was definitely like, let me get a meal and like a snack. Oh, and maybe like another little like snack on top of that. Just because this is like 3 meals I got
famished.
A carb load for. Yeah. So not great. Our mutual friend Nicole used to run these kind of weight loss challenges. And she'd been kind of telling me to do them for years. And I kind of thought, I don't know if I really want to do that. And, you know, just had no motivation, was kind of in denial probably about the whole thing. And finally agreed to it and went. And when I stepped on the scale my first night, it was almost 392 pounds.
Wow.
So I was...
A lot of pounds.
8 pounds. Yes. A lot of weight. I was a few pounds away. I was like, really, at the rate I was going, I was like a few weeks away from hitting 400 pounds. And nothing fit. And it was, you know, painful to just like get up and move around. I had pretty much stopped being active at all. So... I just kind of right then and there, it was an almost instantaneous thing. Like, okay, that was old me. This is new me. And that was on a Thursday, and I gave it the weekend, and I came to work Monday and basically changed my diet overnight. Hard stop on everything. Switched to like 1,500 calories a day, low fat, high protein, low carb kind of stuff. Nothing crazy. I mean, I didn't really give myself too strict of a diet. I just told myself I was just going to eat the things that I know I should eat and kind of keep an eye on my calories and work out every day. And the first week I lost like 8 pounds. So,
wow. So I have a question for you.
Well, keep going.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I have a question for you. So what was that transition like? So you say like a weekend, you gave yourself through the weekend, probably eating as old Ben, as I'm going to call you, would eat. And then like Monday you just started with this new diet. What was that transition like, just cold turkey going from one to the other?
It was in some ways not as hard as you might think. I'm really lucky because at work we have a cafeteria that gives me good options. So I could get breakfast and lunch healthy really easy. I just had to make the decision and then take care of myself at night.
So,
but the hardest part was I went to bed hungry every night for like a couple of weeks, you know, every night going to bed and just lying in bed and being really, really hungry because I was a 2,500 calorie deficit from how I'd eaten before. And that was tough for a couple weeks, and then my body adjusted, and then, you know, it's actually, the dieting part has not really been that difficult once you get into the groove and you just decide to stick with it. I mean, sure, there are days where you want something or maybe you slip up a little bit, but all in all, it's been pretty easy to just form new habits if you just do them, if you're motivated and just do them.
So your motivation really came from seeing that scale.
Yeah, I
and
would say
feeling
so. I mean,
like crap.
Yeah, it's a culmination. It was a culmination of years of stuff, and I think that was like the make or break moment. But it was just something snapped when I saw that scale be that high that I never thought I would get close to 400 pounds. So I just stopped doing everything I was doing essentially overnight.
Wow, talk about self control and discipline.
That's incredible willpower.
That
it reminds
is incredible.
Me of like the stories of my grandfather, who's now passed, but he was an incredibly like strong-willed and stubborn to like a fault kind of guy. And I remember hearing the stories about him just one day deciding to quit smoking, just stopping and never having another cigarette again. And just, it was just over. And I've always respected that because I don't think I have that kind of willpower. In fact, I know I don't.
That's incredible, Ben. You are incredible. So I know you said you ate a high protein, explain your diet one more time.
It's just kind of low fat, high protein.
Did you do a lot of grains or whole grains?
I really don't have anything super crazy about my diet. I'm not on any particular diet. I just started saying, okay, should I eat this? Probably not. And just made those choices. Like don't really eat fried foods. Don't eat fridge fries. Don't eat like just treats and sugary things. But there's not really anything particularly set about the diet I do, which I think is what's made it sustainable, is it's really just about me making sure that I make the right choices more than anything else.
Interesting.
How did your, like, so the diet piece is obviously huge and like a giant change. How did you change kind of your exercise and activity? Did that change? Did that contribute to it? What kind of role does that play? Because I know the diet is such a huge thing. What role does the exercise play?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to do them both. At least for me, I had periods where I might would exercise a lot, but not really eat right. And I had some periods before this where I would try and eat right, but not exercise a lot. And it really is the combo. But I mean, when it comes down to it, I started working out 4 to 5 to 6 times a week at first. Basically every day after work, I would go to our work gym and hit the elliptical for an hour. I would take my iPad and put an episode of Netflix on or whatever show I was watching and be like, you're not getting off this till this is over. Wow. And so I'd go for 45 minutes to an hour, basically every day. That was about the first 6 months. Then I sort of maxed out the elliptical and got bored with it and started doing other things, some classes, some running. And now I've gotten kind of into running more. I run a couple times a week now.
Which would have probably been hard on your joints before as big as you were.
For
you
sure.
Couldn't have run at all.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't start running until I probably lost 100 pounds. And at that point, I was so bored with the elliptical. I was like, I'm just going to go on a run. I've always hated running. And then I did it, and it wasn't so bad because I was, you know, I'd lost 100 pounds and already had built up a little bit of stamina, so then I could start building on that.
Right.
And trying to run a little bit more each day. So, yeah, and so I'm still at the point where I try and work out, you know, 3 to 5 times a week. Depends on the week. Depends on what I've got going on. But I try not to at a minimum, go 3 times a week.
I am
make
like
me feel still, really bad about myself.
Yeah, then I am still so like I cannot. Wow. And this is not the first time I'm hearing this, and it's still just blowing me away. Like I'm so impressed and just wow. So I know on like the shows like The Biggest Loser and those types of shows where people go on and lose a ton of weight. There's always a mental component to the contestants' experience as well as the physical weight loss and dietary changes and things like that. Did you experience kind of like a mental transformation of any kind, or is that just all made for TV stuff?
No, I think there's some truth to that. I think there's some truth to I could not have done this a few years ago. I think there was I had to get myself in the right place mentally almost leading up to being like losing weight. And then I had to kind of have that shift of I'm going to be in control now. Whatever was going on before with my life, I didn't know that I was in control. And as soon as I made the mental adjustment of I'm in control of myself, I can decide not to eat that. I can choose not to go work out every day. I mean, it is a cliche, but it was just, I'm in control now and I can make the choices. And guess what? If I just make the right choices, these results would happen. And it's just a slight shift of, I am the one who has the power now. I'm the one who's in control. I'm the one who's going to make the choices for myself.
I'm the captain now.
That's
right. So when you like, do you now experience not wanting to eat healthy one day or not wanting to go to the gym? Like, is that what you tell yourself? Like, I'm in control. I need to make the right choices. Like, is that what gets you there?
Yeah, that's kind of my mantra now, is a little bit of like, I'm in control. Like sometimes I'll be on the treadmill or whatever, and I'm going to run 3 miles today, and I get to 2 miles and I'm like, I could really just get off this and go home. Like right now, there's a big red button on the treadmill that says stop. Like I could just hit that and go home. And I just
and
tell
nobody
myself
would,
like,
nobody would know. Like there's
nobody would know. Nobody would care, you know?
Yeah.
But I just tell myself I'm in control. I can run that last mile or whatever. So yeah, that's kind of been my mantra a little bit. This last year is, it was really after I had a couple of weeks of results that switched in my head of, oh, I made these decisions and had these results. I can just keep doing that and we'll keep having results.
You know what I do when I'm on the treadmill and I've run like 2.5 miles and I have
you have a crazy workout
no,
habits,
I
which
have,
we've talked about
I have,
before.
I have two things to say. One is if I'm dying, you know, if I think I'm going to die, puke, pass out, I just say I endured childbirth. I can do this. I birthed a child. Maybe not...
They
cut it out of me,
mean,
but I endured the 27 hours before that of labor. I'm like, if I can endure child labor, I can do another mile on the treadmill. And then the second thing I do is when I think I'm going to die, when I've already gotten past the point of I've endured childbirth, like those thoughts, then I turn on, what's that song? Can't Hold Us by Macklemore. And it's 4 minutes and 13 seconds. And I just like run, like my pants are
song.
On fire. And then I just... I do that for 4 minutes because that's how long the song is, and then I just get off and want to die. Both things work very well. Oh, what about you, Steve? What are you not getting?
I have a general no treadmill policy. So I don't run unless it involves chasing a leather ball and putting in an iron hoop. That's generally my approach.
Yeah.
So what was the hardest part? I know you talked about kind of having the hunger pains at the beginning as you made the transition and kind of eating fewer calories. Was that kind of the hardest part, or was there anything, what was the hardest part of kind of this whole process?
That was definitely the hardest phase. I would say the hardest part generally has been keeping up the workouts.
Yeah.
Keeping up the, because even now, like I don't really love working out. I've got to myself with the running where I can enjoy it, but if it's a choice between running or sitting on my couch and playing PlayStation, like, I would much rather do that.
Fair enough.
So I've still, he's I still human. Don't, I'm not, yeah, I'm not a workout junkie. Like, I don't want, I don't in particularly enjoy the process. So, it's trying to switch things up, trying to have goals that I'm hitting, trying to, once I got bored of something, move on to something else. Just trying to make sure that I have the motivation to work out, to keep the workouts up. That's definitely the hardest part. Because if you work a full-time job and you get off work and you've been going since 7 a.m. and you're tired and you want to go home, and it's tough some days to say, no, I'm going to go spend 45 minutes, you know, killing myself, basically, in the basement gym. So yeah, it's that motivation is probably the hardest part for me. And I've had weeks where like I might would fall and only work out once or twice, and then I wouldn't have the results, and then I'd get mad at myself and then work out like 6 days in a row the next week. So
well, that's a good internal awesome, motivation.
Ben. I just love it.
I guess the flip side of that is, like, I was gonna ask, like, what's the most rewarding part? But obviously, like, the results are pretty rewarding. I guess another spin on that would be like, what's something that now that you've lost all this weight, what's something that's like surprised you? Like, obviously you're thinner, probably feel better about yourself, clothes probably fit better, but like, what's something that surprised you that maybe you didn't expect? It's like a really like rewarding part about being where you are now after all this.
Yeah, it's all the little things that you don't know. Like when you're morbidly obese, when you're really overweight, like I was, you start doing these little things subconsciously that once you've lost that weight, you start to realize like, I didn't recognize that in myself. I didn't realize that I was maybe not going to certain social situations or functions because I felt crappy, not just about myself or the way I looked, but like I just felt crappy because I had eaten 2,000 calories of fried food for dinner, you know?
Wow. You are Southern. You were from South Carolina.
That's, that's true. But yes, in my blood, I still, you know, just want Bojangles.
so good.
That actually may have been the hardest part was when I went home for Christmas. I gave myself one trip to Bojangles, whereas the year before I went twice a day the whole time. I was home. It's just little things like that, or the fact that I can now go into any clothing store basically and walk around and be like, hey, that's a cool t-shirt. Do they have it in my size? Oh yeah, they do have it in my size because my size is a normal size now. You know, I don't not wearing a 4XL tall t-shirt. I can wear an XL t-shirt. I don't need size 48 jeans. I wear size 36, kind of almost a 34 now jeans. Like,
Ben, you're same size I am now,
Ben,
man.
you are looking svelte these days.
My mom told me, she asked me what size jeans I was wearing. I said, I think I'm wearing 36 right now. And she said, you didn't even wear that when you were like 12. Like you basically went right from kid size to like 42s. So,
wow. I somehow we need to get all our listeners to read a piece that Ben wrote on Medium, and he wrote it last winter at the end of 2016.
It was January 1st, actually. It was on New Year's Day.
Oh, it was on New Year's Day this year. He wrote a piece, and it was amazing, Ben. Like, I have to tell you, just your whole journey, everything is just so inspiring. And so I want to know, and I want you to tell people, if people are thinking about making a change in their life, you know, it might not be a matter of losing 150 pounds. It might be something different. It might be weight loss related. It might not be. What is the advice you would give to somebody who's trying to make a change in their lifestyle, but they just haven't quite been able to do it yet?
I think it's so basic. And again, it's a cliche, but people already know what they're supposed to do. Like everyone tries to get on these really complex diets or these really, convoluted plans, or I've got to do this and I've got to, I've got to eat rice 8 times a day, or I've got to, only eat tofu or whatever works for people. But everyone gets on these things that are unsustainable over the long term. And the truth is you already know the right kinds of food to eat. You already know what you should be eating. They taught it to you in health class in the sixth grade. Like, you know, what's good, what's bad. You're just not willing to do it. And if you're not willing to do it, I can't tell you how many times people are like, what do you not eat? And I'm like, well, I don't really eat a lot of cheese. I don't, basically don't eat cheese anymore at all. And their first thing's like, oh, I could just never do that. I need to lose 50 pounds, but I could never stop eating cheese. yeah, you could. You could just not eat cheese. Like, it's really not that difficult, actually. You know, if you do that, you're going to cut out, most people are going to cut like 500 calories out of their diet a day just by not eating cheese anymore. Like, it's really basic stuff. Like, you know what's good, you know what's bad, you're just not willing to do it. And you just have to figure out I mean, for me, it was hitting rock bottom, but I think for a lot of people, it's just what's going to be the thing that's going to trigger that switch to make you make the change, because you already know, you know what you're supposed to do. You're just not doing it.
Yeah. I think that was my favorite thing that you wrote in that Medium piece, was that, you know, everyone always asks, what's the secret? And the secret is, you already know the secret. Like, you know what you're supposed to do.
Right.
But you just have to do it, and you have to commit, and you have to be the person who's in control and be in control of your own life, which is what you were talking about, which I think is really great. And I think, certainly for a lot of people, maybe like me, who don't have quite the willpower that you apparently do, maybe a little harder. But I think it's totally right. And I think the ability that you've had to be able to do that and to stick with it over, you know, now more than a year, and to see the results that you have, is really inspiring and really awesome. So I'm really glad that you were able to come on and join us and kind of share that experience. Cause I think I think to Jesse's point, it's not just, you know, do you need to lose 150 pounds? I think it's anything that you want to make a change in your life. It's never going to be easy. We generally know the way that we need to go, and it's just a matter of committing to do it and buckling down and doing it. So I think that's applicable, you know, no matter kind of what phase or stage of your life you're in or where you want to go. So that, I think that's a good place to leave this segment.
I could talk about this all day with Ben. I'm so inspired and so proud of him.
I know you.
Well, thank you.
Jesse's like a proud mother over here. Not that Ben doesn't already have a mother of his own, but we do have one more segment we need to get to, which people will be just as interested in as they are in Ben's fantastic weight loss journey. So we'll take a quick break, listen to a few seconds of cheerful piano music, then we'll get right back into it. And we're back, still joined by Ben Wagner. And another fun fact about Ben Wagner, beyond just being our resident weight loss guru, Ben is also our resident cinephile. Ben Wagner likes movies more than just about anybody I've ever met, more than anybody I know in my entire life. I think you've probably spent like a third of your life sitting in a darkened room watching images being projected on a wall?
It's probably pretty close.
How many movies did you see in 2016?
If we're just counting just new releases.
In the theaters.
I saw 70 new releases in the theaters last year.
You can do the math on how much that costs with the price of movie tickets these days.
And then a couple of those I saw multiple times. So,
how many times did you see Star Wars?
I only saw Star Wars 3 times. Rogue One I only saw 3 times. Force Awakens I saw a few more times than that.
It was like 8?
It was 7. I figured 7 times for episode 7, right?
So how many times did you go to the movies this year? Like, you saw 70 movies. How many times did you go to the movies?
So see, I saw a handful of them 2 or 3 times, and then I also did a couple of those like Fathom event, like play things. So I don't know, I probably went to a movie theater 85 times last year, I would say.
Jeez, that's amazing, Ben.
It's like once every like 4 or 5 days.
So
yeah, I basically go almost every weekend twice. Sometimes there were a few like 4 movie weekends that would make up for like a movie weekend where I didn't go or went once. But yeah.
So I have a really important question before we get into the big stuff. What does the new Ben Wagner eat when he goes to the movies?
For the first like 8 months that I was doing weight loss, I would sometimes sneak like a protein bar or something like that in with me and like buy a bottle of water like that was or like a Perrier or something.
Ooh,
like,
fancy, Ben.
Yes, yeah, very fancy. That's what you get at the Art House Theater in Salt Lake City. You get Perrier. In starting probably sometime in the fall, I started letting myself like once a weekend, if I'm at the movie theaters, get like a small popcorn with no butter and kind of like have that as my kind of snack. So I do get a popcorn now and again, but I try not to, I don't get like a big one and I don't put any butter or salt on it. I just like eat it straight.
So if our Utah friends that are listening to the podcast run into Ben Wagner at the movie theater, At the Broadway Theater, do not think you should go up and be like, hey, why are you eating popcorn? Because you guys, it has no butter, no salt.
No it's butter. Okay. That's right. It's basically just like straight corn.
Corn kernels that have been heated to a certain temperature and that's it.
That's right.
I used to be a lot more like Ben. I never hit like the 70 movies a year. Never Ben levels, but I used to be really, really into movies. I still really like film. But one of the sad things I found about becoming a parent is that you just, one of the things that goes out the window, there's a lot of things that go out the window, but one of the things that you sacrifice, unless you just have an awesome babysitter, I guess, is you just don't go to the movies. I've not gone to a movie this year. In 2016, since 2016, I did not go to a single movie. I mean, my big confession, I'm a big Star Wars fan like you are, Ben. I have not seen Rogue One yet, which is a pain.
Steve, that hurts.
It hurts.
That's a stab. I mean, that's right to my core.
This is harder for me than you, Ben. This is hurting me more than it's hurting you.
You're the biggest Wedge Antilles fan I know.
I did dress up as Wedge Antilles for 2 years as a child on Halloween. So that shows you just how much of a loser that I am.
Having a kid, man.
This is why I don't have kids. I mean,
fair enough.
Apart from no one wants to have them with me, but other than that.
Fair enough. Well, so since Jesse and I have not really seen any movies,
I went to one movie this year, Steve. Well, speak for yourself.
Jesse went to one movie. I did not go to any movies, which makes us uniquely unqualified to discuss this past weekend's events. It was the Oscars. And as we have not seen any of the movies that were nominated or that won, which I assume is actually probably the case for most Americans, we figured that we would have you on, Ben, because we really, really, really need your help breaking down what just happened. And I assume that the best place to start would not be at the beginning, but at the end of the show with the big dramatic finish where La La Land won Best Picture, but then they didn't win Best Picture, and it was all sorts of craziness and envelope snafus.
What the freak happened?
So just, Ben, please explain to us what do we need to know about all of that? Because it was very confusing.
Yeah, it is confusing. Apparently, I mean, there's a lot of great internet sleuthing. If you want to really get into the X and O's of like what happened, there's apparently two sets of envelopes, and the guy was like taking a picture with Emma Stone and like was rushing and grabbed the wrong envelope to give to Warren Beatty and a whole bunch of other stuff. I think there was like some conspiracy theorizing going on for a while, but I think it's just kind of an honest mistake. Kind of surprising it hasn't happened before, actually.
So there's two sets of envelopes?
Yeah, they have a backup. They have one on either side of the stage, and they alternate, like, coming in, who gets what.
Wow, that's risky.
And so, I guess the guy who had the envelope, there's like his Instagram. He had like a picture with Emma Stone or taking a picture of Emma Stone, like right when she came back through. And then was like rushing to give the, anyway. So it seems like a pretty honest mistake. I think it was in a weird way. I mean, first off, it's just so in line with everything else that's happened in the last year. Like, it's just, of course this happened.
Yet another crazy turn of events at a major cultural event.
I know. It is so perfect. It's just so in line with everything else that's happened. It's too perfect, really, which is why I think people were conspiracy theorizing. It just seemed too perfect for that to happen. But I think in a weird way, it's kind of beautiful. If you're really into the award, like the Oscars and following the awards season for movies, I know you said on your podcast before you guys love all awards shows.
Yes.
I hate all awards shows.
What?
except the Oscars, which I care way
don't
too much about.
Don't tell me you hate the Grammys.
I don't know if I've ever watched more than like 10 minutes of the
Grammys.
It's
just
I
like a big concert where they hand out awards in between songs. It's great.
Yeah, but the awards are like so. Well, first off, I don't want to get into a can of worms about the Grammys, but their like rules make no sense.
No,
it's
don't
like,
make any sense. That's why
like
I don't care about
the
awards.
It's from like August 4th to August 5th of the next. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's true. Oscars is very straightforward. I'll give you that.
Yeah, the Oscars are like the one that I follow super intense. So if you've been following the awards season, it got kind of heated online in like the film universe. That La La Land, which is, by the way, like a $30 million movie that's like a postmodern musical that with a sad ending, spoiler alert for La La Land, with not a happy ending, somehow made like $350 million and was like this juggernaut. It's this like kind of tiny movie. And it kind of got put in this position because it became the award season front runner of like, it's a juggernaut. Like it's the Avengers or something. Like this movie was made by a 31-year-old like whiz kid who's obsessed with jazz. Like it is not a juggernaut.
Shout out to a friend of the pod, Damien Chazelle.
Big friend of the pod, Damien. It's a weird little art movie.
And it somehow got made.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm shocked by all of this. I'm glad you're saying this because it's validating everything I feel about this movie.
Yeah. It was not this huge thing. It just kind of got swept up in the moment, became the award season front runner. And then you've got this little, this great little indie movie, Moonlight, that cost $1 million to make. That is a challenging movie to watch that not a lot of people saw, but is beautiful and important. And so it kind of got this like David and Goliath narrative, which was really a false dichotomy. And everyone had to turn it into like the Patriots and the Falcons, even though it's not like sports. It doesn't work that way. But so it got a little nasty online between like if you were in the Moonlight crowd, if you were in the La La Land crowd, like this kind of argument back and forth. And then the cool thing about it is if you've been following it, the creative teams on either side, the creative team of La La Land and the creative team behind Moonlight, are actually really like good friends. They've been really supportive of each other throughout the whole thing. And so there was something kind of beautiful about La La Land sort of winning and then losing, which is kind of the narrative of the movie La La Land, and then having to give the award to Moonlight, and they were super gracious about it. And then afterwards, the Moonlight guys were super gracious toward the La La Land people. And it was like, oh yeah, this is all just a bunch of artists who make art and are cool and hang out and like to make cool stuff. And guess what? It's not like sports where everyone has to hate each other and there's rivalries. Like it can just be a cool community.
Right. I thought that was like my, there's like two things that I thought were really fascinating. I was watching this kind of live as it happened. Jesse had fallen asleep like an hour and a half before.
Some things never change, Ben.
Yeah. Jesse falls asleep whenever we watch anything. So I was watching it live, and the things that struck me as this was all happening was, one, when the La La Land people were giving giving their speeches, and all of a sudden there was all these short ugly guys in suits with headsets running around behind them grabbing envelopes out of people's hands. I was like, oh my gosh, something is not right here. But then I thought that the actual, I don't want to say like the winner out of all of this, because that's not true. I don't want to like oversell it, but I thought that the way that Justin Horowitz, the producer of one of the producers of La La Land, who kind of made the announcement that they didn't win, the way that he handled that was just incredibly classy. In the face of like, think about it, like in context, you were just told that you like achieved your lifelong dream. You achieved the biggest accomplishment in your career. You received the highest honor that your field has to offer. And stood up and gave a speech, and then, oh, never mind, we're taking it away from you, and you're going to be the person. And he was the one who stepped up and like graciously ceded it to somebody else. That was very impressive to me.
Do you know who not would have not been as gracious?
Me.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump definitely would not have been as gracious. Moonlight is fake news. They're the worst. People are saying that they switched the envelopes. There are thousands of Academy voters who came from Arizona to vote in our election.
So I just have to say, Ben, the only movie I did see in 2016 was La La Land. And after I saw it, Steve told me that you were a big fan. And I was shocked because I'm kind of like what you already said. I'm shocked that everyone loved it. I loved it because I feel like I was the target demographic for that movie. Right. And I grew up watching the musical. Like that was just like right in my wheelhouse. I'm shocked you liked it. I'm shocked most people liked it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm interested about the most because I found a lot of people didn't like it. Not didn't like it. Maybe that's the wrong word. Like I went and saw it with my mother and sisters who I thought this is a musical. They love musicals. They would love this movie. And they were all kind of lukewarm on it. Again, spoiler alert, because of the ending. Like they all wanted the Hollywood ending, which I think is kind of what the movie's about. How we don't get Hollywood endings. Like no matter as much as we want to make our lives like movies, we don't get Hollywood endings in the end. But I think a lot of people that I've talked to were maybe turned off a little bit by the end of La La Land that they wanted. Fabulous. And I would say this is like as like the casual moviegoer. They're expecting like a big happy romantic ending, and that's not what the movie gives them. I like it because of that, because I'm a cynic and I have a cold, dead heart and don't believe in love. But
but Emma Stone, Ben, Emma Stone.
Well, that was my other thing. I also love Emma Stone. I have loved her for a long time. She's my favorite. So I love the movie. I think it's got a lot to say. I think it's smart. I think it's really well made. I think the music's great. I think the stars are great. I think it's just a really great movie. And it also, like you said, it appealed very specific to my tastes.
In women like and music.
I like jazz. I like long takes. I like movies about LA. I like Emma Stone. So it was kind of like all my sweet spots, really.
That's adorable.
So besides like, so the La La Land, besides La La Land, besides Emma Stone, like who else were you most happy to see win on Sunday night? Besides kind of the La La Land, Emma Stone crowd.
Well, I would say I actually think the Oscars got it right almost across the board.
Wow.
In terms of who actually won the awards. There's not one award other than maybe the Best Editing Award for Hacksaw Ridge that I would, because that movie's not even a movie, that I would sort of take umbrage with. Otherwise, like Mahershala Ali is great. I've liked that guy for a long time. He's really good in a lot of stuff and just
Remy.
He's blowing up. Yeah, exactly. I liked him in House of Cards. He was great in Luke Cage. He was good in Hidden Figures. Like he's great. And he's about to be like a dominant Hollywood actor for like 10 years. Like he's going to blow up. He's great.
I thought you were about to say he's about to be a really good dad.
He did just have a kid.
Well, that too.
He
just had a that kid. Too. He did just have a kid. I've loved Viola Davis for years. She should have 3 Oscars. The fact that she only has 1 now is ridiculous.
Do you think she should have won for Doubt?
Yes,
that was a
absolutely.
Great role. She was awesome in that
I
role.
Love her in that, and I mean, The Help has issues, but she's great in that movie. So I don't know. I really across the board liked everyone.
Wow, that's impressive.
I kind of even like at the end of the day that Damien Chazelle winning for Best Director, which is very well deserved, and Moonlight winning Best Picture. I kind of like when the Oscars spread it around like this, where everyone gets to be recognized for something. I don't like the Titanic years where one thing dominates everything. That's boring, and it makes it feel like there's like one good movie a year. I think it's much better when we get to now. Moonlight is gonna. A lot of people are gonna go see Moonlight now. People who didn't see La La Land are gonna go see La La Land. People are gonna check out Manchester by the Sea. Like these are movies that more people are gonna see because they got some recognition at the Oscars.
Ben, confession: I've never seen Titanic.
Okay, confession: I had never seen Titanic all the way through until like 3 months ago, and I watched it because it was on Netflix, and I was like, I've actually never seen
you
this.
You closed your
and
eyes during the nude scene, right?
Yeah, well,
that's
naturally.
What happened when I watched it at 13. My
along.
Mom made me close my eyes.
You sang along with My Heart Will Go On, didn't you?
Yeah. I turned it on and was like, oh, I've never seen this first half, and kind of realized I'd only ever seen from the iceberg on.
No,
when everybody dies, which is when a 13-year-old boy wants to tune in.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, that's what the 29-year-old boy wanted too, because the first guest, Titanic, not very good for a lot of it. Not very good.
Well, hot takes.
Hot takes with Ben Wagner, taking down
welcome,
film
welcome
classics.
Welcome to The Undisputed with Skip Bayless.
Well, I will say that I agree with you on pretty much all the people you said that you're excited to see win. I love Mahershala Ali. I think he, in addition to being a great actor, he's just like, seems like a really good, decent human being. And
absolutely.
I was also really excited to see Damien Chazelle win because
he's adorable.
Yes, he is adorable, but B, I loved, one of my favorite movies of the past couple of years was Whiplash, which was his first kind of big movie, which he didn't win for. And so I took the win for La La Land as like a spiritual recognition for yeah. Whiplash, which I really, really loved.
Well, he's about to get a huge check to make whatever he wants. Yeah, so
he's going to make whatever he wants next.
A lot of good stuff coming from Damien in the next few years.
Well, it's interesting because like La La Land was kind of his blank check after Whiplash, but it was like not, it was the blank, it wasn't really that blank of a check. It was like significantly more money than it cost to make Whiplash, but still not that much money. So now he can really go all out.
Yeah.
What do you think was kind of who was the biggest snub? And this is somewhere Jesse and I have no ability to weigh in on because Jesse saw one movie and I saw zero movies. But who did you think was kind of the biggest snub? Either someone who was nominated that didn't win and in your opinion should have won, or somebody who just like wasn't nominated at all maybe and that you thought should have been nominated and maybe should have won.
Yeah, well, like I said, the Hacksaw Ridge winning for editing, all the other nominees in that category were more deserving. Hacksaw Ridge is half a movie, half a dumpster fire.
Shout out to a friend of the pod, Mel Gibson, who directed that one.
That's right. Yeah, big friend of the pod, Mel.
Terrible spray tan.
Terrible views on Jewish people.
Terrible.
Terrible views on a lot of things.
Inappropriate choice in partner at the inappropriate age difference. I mean, that was a bad one. I think otherwise, the nominations were pretty solid. There were some, my two favorite movies of the year were Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some, which is, I think, the finest comedy script of the past 10 years. Like, it's just a dynamite script, and the fact that it didn't get at least a writing nomination is ridiculous.
You advocating for a Richard Linklater movie is like me advocating for Russell Westbrook to win the MVP.
Yeah,
it's like,
I know,
it's
a homer pick.
It's a
homer pick. I know. And my second favorite movie of the year was The Witch, which came out at Sundance 2 years ago and finally got released this past year, and is, I think, one of the three best horror movies ever made. It's incredible, incredible horror movie that is a really, really also strong script, and I think could have easily been a best directing and best original screenplay nominations. Those were probably my two big ones. I think The Lobster could have also deserved to be a best picture.
I have no idea
Colin
what
Farrell
that is.
That's
best
a movie?
For best
I really like Lobster generally.
That's from my boy Yorgos Lanthimos with Colin Farrell.
Oh, Yorgos.
Yeah, it's a great little movie about how if you're single, you have 45 days to find a partner or you get turned into an animal. And it's a weird black comedy that's really, really good. So those would be my kind of I think it got a nominee for Best Original Screenplay, but I would have liked to have seen it. Colin Farrell could have been in Best Actor easy. So, but yeah, I mean, there was just a lot of good stuff this year and a lot of stuff didn't get nominated. But because there's only so many slots when it comes down to it. Best Supporting Actor, I could give 20. There's probably 20 people who deserve to be in that category that weren't, but there's only 5 spots, you know. Otherwise, though, I think at the end of the day, the Oscars got it pretty right this year. I felt pretty good about the whole thing.
See, we didn't watch any of them. The only thing that we do have thoughts on and that we're capable of having thoughts on is the original song category, because those were only 3 minutes each and we could listen to them during nap time.
Yeah, I will say in that category, City of Stars is the worst song on the La La Land soundtrack. I like every other song on that soundtrack better. And if we're just going off the performances at the Oscars, the Moana girl should have won, because I did not see Moana. Is one of the things I did not see this year. Unfortunately, I'm still wanting to see it, but that performance was great.
That girl was adorable, and Lin just has a special place in our house.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. We really wanted him to get the O in the EGOT. I think that's the last one he needed, was the
that
O.
That would have been adorable. Yeah. And he would have had a great speech. It would have been great.
He's going to have some more shots, though. He that was not his only shot to throw away.
He's not throwing away the other shots.
Right.
I have to say my biggest snub of the night was Justin Timberlake. Besides Lin, Justin Timberlake not winning with the mom song. The troll song is like the ultimate mom song. That's what our friend Hunter calls it. He calls it the mom song, and it totally is. And I think Justin Timberlake's opening the Oscars was amazing. I think his performance was fabulous.
Was that your favorite moment of the night?
For sure, favorite moment of the night was Justin opening the opening the show. Haircut was terrible. Dancing was awesome. Him and Jessica Biel dancing in the the aisle was like the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Goals. Hashtag goals.
Hashtag goals. The mom song. I loved it.
Well, the thing that I found interesting about the mom song, which I do think is a great song, and I would have been fine with the mom song.
Do you like the mom song, Ben?
Not particularly.
Because you're not a mom.
It's not Justin's best work.
No, it's not his best work, but I would have been fine with it winning because that would have meant that Max Martin, my hero and idol and the creator of all great pop music of the last 20 years, would have had an Oscar. But the thing about the Justin Timberlake performance that I found interesting, I don't know if you know this backstory, Ben, but when he came down the aisle, the person who was sitting right on the corner, on the first row, on the front row on the corner was, do you remember?
I do not remember. Who was it?
It was Ryan Gosling. And do you know about the history of Justin Timberlake and Ryan Gosling?
Weren't they both on something together as kids? Were they on Mickey Mouse Club as kids together?
They were. So this is very fascinating. I hope our listeners are still with us for this because I'm about to rock your worlds.
Let me just say, I'm willing to go down any Ryan Gosling, like, tangent.
Any and all.
Everyone
any
is.
Any and all Ryan Gosling tangents, yeah.
So they were, you're correct, Ben, they were on the Mickey Mouse Club together as children when they were 10 or so years old, which filmed in Orlando, Florida. That was a lot of talent came out of that show. It was Justin Timberlake, J.C. Chazé, who is a future in sync with Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Ryan Gosling, Keri Russell, like they were all on that show. And Ryan and Justin were actually very, very close to the point that after kind of the first season, Ryan's mom had to go back to Canada to go back to work. And so Justin and Ryan lived with Justin and his mom in Orlando.
I did not know any of
this. And they were like brothers, essentially. And now they do not talk. They do not talk anymore. They grew up together, were essentially brothers, lived together for years of their lives, and now they really don't have a relationship, and they've kind of talked about it a little bit in the press individually. It doesn't seem like it's hostile. Ryan Gosling has described it as like, you know, you like have friends in elementary school, and then you like grow up and you become different people and you're not really friends anymore.
So it's just complicated.
And so like, I don't know if there was something that happened or they just, you know, fell out of touch and grew apart, although that's kind of weird because they both are in Hollywood and that's a pretty small world at that level when you're an A-lister. But anyway, as Justin was coming down the aisle into the theater singing his song, Ryan Gosling is sitting right there on the corner at the front as he's coming down this aisle. And he does kind of go
and Justin
in.
Justin kind of went in for like a side hug.
Justin goes in for a side hug. And
Ryan
the face
was
on,
not having it.
The face on Ryan Gosling, he was not totally into it.
And then Justin, when he went down in the crowd the second time around before he went over to Jessica Biel, he did the same thing.
He like gave him like a little tap on his chest.
And Ryan was not going for it.
Ryan was just like clapping like politely, like along with the beat, but it was very strange.
It was weird.
Everyone else probably missed it, but if you know the backstory of those two, it was totally fascinating.
After this podcast is over, I'm going to spend like 4 hours Zapruder filming this. Like, how is this? Like, if what happened at the end hadn't happened, this would have been like the biggest story. I feel like.
I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but I was like,
we rewatched it. We rewound and we rewatched it
like a couple times.
A few times, yeah.
Yeah. What I'm getting out of this is it's a real Russell KD situation, it sounds like.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what caused the rift or even if the rift is really a rift. I'm not sure, but it's fascinating.
Can this be blamed on Rachel McAdams in some way?
Yes.
We'll say yes. Probably always Rachel McAdams' fault. So, Ben, what was your, before we wrap up, what was your favorite kind of moment of the night, of the show itself, like beyond the awards and who won the awards? What was kind of your favorite moment? Did you like Kimmel? Is there anything good that Kimmel did?
Yeah, two quick things. I would say Mahershala Ali's speech I thought was great. That was probably my absolute highlight of the night. I just thought that was great. But on top of that, in terms of the presentation, the whole Kimmel Damon thing is great.
Gosh.
Like I love that it's like a 15-year running gag that they paid off at the Oscars somehow.
Yeah.
And I also really like that they always have some running theme, and it's always like Comedies make us laugh. Drama makes us cry. Let us show you great comedies throughout the years. And this year it was like, I was so inspired by Shirley MacLaine, and let's talk. I was so inspired by Back to the Future and Michael J. Whatever. I feel like that was all a long con. That was just totally all a setup for to have that We Bought a Zoo joke, which is a joke that like 30 people laughed at. But that was really, really funny to me. And I just thought that whole bit was really well done. I thought Kimmel was pretty good throughout. I thought Ellen was probably the best host of recent years, but Kimmel's probably a close second.
But who can top Ellen? Like, Ellen is in a class of her own.
She's on another level.
Ellen was great. Ellen was great that year. I think they'll have her back again at some point. But I would say Kimmel was probably, you know, coming in close behind that in terms of being a good host. Like, Seth MacFarlane a couple years ago was a disaster.
That was a big bomb.
Who was it last year? Was it Chris Rock last year?
Chris Rock last year.
Like, he was okay.
He was fine. He had some biting racial humor, which was deserved of the Oscar so white thing.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I remember him coming in hot.
Yeah.
Like, coming in with just scorching at the, like, first 5 minutes, and then I feel like he disappeared after that. We never saw him again.
I thought Kimmel did a good job of resurfacing enough with funny stuff throughout the show, but not too much, which is always a challenge for hosts, is, like, what happens after the initial, like, the opening monologue or the opening, you know, bit. Like, you have that. That's, like, your big set piece. Like, but what makes a great host is how they interject themselves throughout the show, and especially reacting to things that maybe aren't planned or that they couldn't.
Which he did good at.
Which I thought he did really well at. And I think the running troll of Damon throughout the show really helped, bring him in a funny way, in a way that they could plan for over and over again. And I think you're totally right. The We Bought a Zoo thing was, like, the apex of that. And then Affleck and Damon coming up, and Affleck again, as he has been for the last several years, totally being in on this joke and giving Damon a hard time, which is just really funny. And it's really funny that bit is still funny, even though they've been doing it since like 2006 now.
So funny.
Yeah, they've been killing it. I will say least valuable player goes to everyone on that bus, because that was awful.
Gary the Tourist?
It was funny for like 30 seconds, and then they went on for another 5.5 minutes. It was kind of funny having to see Denzel take a selfie with them. Like, that was pretty funny. But overall, that bit went on way too long. So I would say I think Ellen, this is partially her fault. She did that pizza bit that year, which was funny. And she did the selfie bit that was like, the most famous selfie of all time. Yeah, iconic. And that was a great thing. And now every year someone feels like they have to do some kind of audience participation bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think it's worked since Ellen. So I'm going to blame her for that. But, you know, she'll come back and top herself, I'm sure, in one of these years.
You know, Ben, I think that comment that you just made is an apt conclusion to this podcast, because it is an apt metaphor for the Oscars themselves. It's funny for about 5 minutes, and then it goes on for like 5 hours.
And you wish Ellen was
there. And you wish it was over. But then we were redeemed this year, because we got the craziness at the end, so it paid off the 5 hours you sat there watching speech after speech after speech of people talking about movies you haven't even seen. So, except for you, Ben. Except for Ben. So I think that is a good place to leave it. We will bring Ben back next year for the Oscars. If we are still doing this podcast next year, which not a guarantee, but we hope to be. If the internet, you know, doesn't shrivel up and die in a Donald Trump driven hellscape, we will hope to bring Ben back next year. But thank you, Ben, for joining us. Any last words before we say goodbye?
I'm a, you know, big fan of the pod, although maybe not literally the biggest fan of the pod anymore.
I like where your head's at, Wagner.
Ben, you are the best. Thank you so much for taking time out of your night and joining us, and for being so inspiring and so motivating and so hilarious, and for seeing all these movies so that we didn't have to. And you are just really the best.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks again to our great friend, friend of the pod, Ben Wagner, and resident cinephile. We'll be back next week when Jesse and I will be talking about what we've learned from our first year as parents, and it's been quite a ride. So tune in. We'll talk to you next week, and thank you once again for joining us for dinner at our place.